It was pretty much just this front row of people. They were probably smaller than that. And one of those was Beck, a visitor. And when a visitor comes into church first week when you're planting a church, you're so desperate to hang on to them. Was that a weird experience walking into kind of seven people listening to a sermon?
I think it's like you were all trying to act so cool. Everyone kind of like didn't even really look at me or talk to me. But then I realised you were all like really...
Yeah, we were pretty excited. And then, so that was like week one. It was either week two or three later, you were having, what was it, breathing difficulties or something like that? No.
Right.
It
was... I was completely fine. But then, so one night, I went to a 21st, I was 21, had a great time, felt totally fine, totally wouldn't have known anything was wrong. And then when I came home, I felt like this sort of pain in my stomach area. So okay, maybe it's just nothing, maybe I ate something bad. And then it just kept getting worse and worse and worse, till it was like excruciating pain. So I remember waking up my mum, like 2 a.m. or something, and asking her to take me to the hospital. And so we went to emergency. sorry, I'm a bit breathless. And I thought, oh, maybe it's appendicitis or something. And so they did some scans, ultrasound and stuff. And that's when they found the tumour in my kidney.
Yeah, you were 21. And what were you thinking when they discovered that?
Well, at first it took them a while to even work out that it was cancer. Because they kept saying, oh, you're so young, it can't be cancer. It must be just benign mass. Yeah, we can just take it out, it's no problem. Or you can just leave it there. But yeah, eventually, like after they did more and more tests, then they realised it was cancer. But yeah, at the time, complete shock. Like I just didn't think how could I have cancer. Like I'd never, the most I had was a broken finger my whole life. Like how could I have cancer? Yeah.
They did a they operated on you. They got it out, and then you went into remission for.
Yep. So they removed my kidney, and then they got it all out. Everything they could see. So. Said, you know, hopefully that's it, you're probably cancer free now. And then 12 months later, I had a follow-up scan and I had another tumour in my, like, in my abdomen area. So that involved a really big, complicated surgery. I think the surgeon described it on a scale of 1 to 10, it was a 12 out of 10. But he's an amazing world-class surgeon and he managed to remove all the cancer again. And that put me back into remission for another 12 months.
Yeah.
And then, but I kept doing more scans and thinking, well, that might be it. And then the next year, they found another tumour in my liver this time. And so they operated again and then removed half my liver. And again, they got everything they could see. So I was back in remission again.
Yeah.
And then the following year, they again, the tumor, so the liver regenerates, you don't know, it's like a normal full size liver by then. But then they found another tumor in my liver, but this time they also found some spots in my lungs, which, yeah, changed everything. Because that suddenly, yeah, so when cancer spreads to a disc organ, after that it becomes very, very difficult to get rid of it, kind of loose in your system. So at that stage, I became incurable, technically. Yeah, so then I had, they operated again on my liver, so I took about 60% of my liver that time. But they still had the spots in my lungs. So then, yeah, at that stage, so I had kidney cancer, but I have a very rare form of kidney cancer. But even for the normal kind of kidney cancer, the kind of chemo options are not that great. So usually people become resistant to them and they have a lot of nasty side effects. So they kind of said, like, the spots in your lungs are really small, so we'll just keep watching and not do anything because we don't want to start using those drugs when we don't have to, because they've only got like a certain shelf life. So we'll put off using it until we really need to. So, yeah, I think Oh, and I've had some radiation in there somewhere. I've had lots of radiation. But
STEMIC research was one of the things which came up, which offered a lot of promise.
Yeah, so immunotherapy.
Immunotherapy, yeah.
Yeah, so we've kind of been hearing about these immune-based drugs that were getting amazing results for all different kinds of cancers, but at that time they weren't really available in Australia, and none of the doctors had ever used them before, so they weren't really keen.
So this was 6 years ago, 7 years ago, there's a lot of talk about this on the internet, overseas, and you're like, gee, that would be great, yep. But it's not happening in Australia.
Yeah, still in trial phase.
But, what was it, 3 years ago, it did become available in Australia?
Yeah, so we just kept kind of monitoring things, and I had like some kind of surgery on my lung and stuff, but nothing that was gonna get cancer or my system. Was just kind of, as things would pop up, then we'd deal with it, like radiation or whatever. But obviously the cancer kept growing and kept spreading a bit more. So then, we got to a point where we have to do something that's instead of just reacting, which is something that's proactive. But fortunately at that time, these immune drugs had become just available in Australia. And so, I was able to start it. So I think I was the first person my doctor ever treated with these drugs.
Amazing. You said to me on Thursday that you've lost a kidney, an adrenal gland, a gallbladder, your liver's been cut twice, your left lung is useless. And I said, but you got a big heart. But where are you at right now? So January was one of the hardest periods of your of the last 7 years for you.
Mm.
Where is your health at now?
So at the end of last year, so I started these immunotherapy drugs, and I actually got an amazing response to them. After only 3 months, all the cancer started shrinking. One of the tumors in my lung, which was like the size of a tennis ball almost, had disappeared, which is an amazing response that very few people get. But unfortunately at that time I also had really bad side effects to it, so I had to stop taking the treatment. And so the cancer has grown since then, since I've been off treatment, so I have gone back on one of the two drugs that I was taking. But I'm off it again now because I've had pneumonia, which I'm still recovering from, but hopefully once I recover I can get back on.
Wow. So that brings you to today.
Yep.
And we're very glad you're here, and her shortness of breath is because of that.
The pneumonia, yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about hospital. Do you like hospital?
I do and I don't. Like, hate being in hospital because it's just awful. You can't sleep. It's noisy and uncomfortable and, like, boring. But in a strange way, like, I do feel very comfortable in hospital because in hospital it's okay for you to be a sick person. Like, it's, for me, having cancer is just a complete non-event when you're in hospital. No one even blinks an eye. It's just, yeah. I fit in, basically.
And you don't feel that way here. The metaphor you used is like there's a glass screen. You go out and it's like all the people are on that side of this glass screen and you're looking in through,
yeah.
But you're not part of it.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
I guess I feel very alien in the real world. Like, I don't feel like everyone else, even though often when I'm well, I can do most things and I look like everyone else, but yeah, I don't feel like everyone else. I feel very different.
Does that make you feel lonely?
Yes.
Even though people are, there's a lot of people in your life that care for you.
Yeah, yeah.
So the presence of people doesn't stop your feeling of loneliness.
Yeah, I think it's just this sense of what you're going through is so different to what everyone else is going through. Because it's not even really in a practical sense so much, even though my life practically is probably quite different from most people my age, but it's just this sense of what my life, my experience is just so different from what everyone else is experiencing.
Do you ever wonder why God hasn't healed you?
Yes. I mean, I know that, so yeah, it's funny when you have a serious illness, you get exposed to a lot of different people's views on God and sickness and suffering and that kind of thing. And a lot of people have said to me, oh, if you just have enough faith, just believe, God will heal you. Which is, I understand why people are saying that, because it gives us a sense of control and it helps us to feel like we have some control over things that happen to us in this life. But it's also quite a hard thing to hear, because it's like, well, maybe I'm just not believing hard enough, or maybe my faith's not strong enough, that's why God hasn't healed me. I don't know why God hasn't healed me. I think I've often wondered what my life would be like if I had never gotten cancer, because this is not how I thought my life would play out when I was 20. I had much different ambitions for myself and imagined a much different life for myself. But yeah, maybe there was, I don't know, maybe if I hadn't had cancer and had gotten everything I wanted in this life, I wouldn't still be trusting Jesus and wouldn't be choosing to follow him. I don't know. But I don't think we ever can really know why.
Last year, you sent me, you sent me an email, which I haven't stopped quoting in church, in the annual report.
Very personal email.
A very personal email. I keep telling her she needs to write a book. And I'm going to read one thing, and can I read one thing?
Not people heard it by now.
I'm a little bit lost, sorry. Here it is. You said this. I've lost it. This is what you said. What would be the point of faith if we had our life so clearly and obviously mapped out before us? God wants us to really trust him, and that means trusting him with the unknowns. Can you reflect on how you came, what did you mean by that, and what is that present experience of trusting God like? Do you find that easy? Can you reflect more on this and share more on this? Because I read it, I keep reading it, and I think it's so profound, and I think we've got a lot to learn from you here.
I guess, so for me, like, uncertainty is just such a big thing in my life. Like, my life's so full of uncertainty. Because, yeah, I'm kind of in a funny space where I'm not terminal, but I have my situation is very, very serious. So I have active cancer in me. So I kind of consider myself living with cancer. But it kind of puts you in this weird place where for most people, like, everything they do now is for the benefit of the future, and they make decisions now based on long-term plans and yeah, how it might benefit them later on down the track. Which for me is something that's difficult for me to do, because I just don't know what my future holds. I mean, I live scan to scan, which is like every 4 months. I mean, even today, I didn't know if I'd be here. Like, I just had to wake up and see how I felt. Like, everything's so uncertain. So I can't really plan for the long term, but then I can't, you know, there's a cliche that you should live every day like it's your last. But then it's like, what if it's not your last day? Like, you can't live like that. It'd just be irresponsible and exhausting. And yeah, so it's like, do I plan to have a long term? But then what if there is no long term? So trying to live in that space is a constant challenge for me. And just, yeah, having the uncertainty of not knowing what the next day holds. And so I think that for me has just really forced me to really just put my trust in God and just trust that whatever happens, God does still love me, and it will be okay, even if it's not what I want to happen.
You're not trusting necessarily for a healing.
No.
So what are you trusting for?
I think I'm just trusting that, well, I have to trust that God will get me through it, that I will be able to get through it. But I guess ultimately, I have to trust that this life is not what it is, and there is something better at the end of this life. So even if everything bad happens to me in this life, there is something good waiting for me.
What you shared with me a couple of psalms that you found helpful. Psalm 23, Psalm 80 something.
85.
85. Why have those spoken so acutely to you?
23, because I do feel like I'm walking through the valley of the shadow of death, and so when it says that Jesus is walking with us through that, that's a great comfort. Because I think at the end of the day, I have an amazing family and beautiful friends and people who are on this journey with me, but then they can't really fully be there. And so having Jesus walk with you is kind of the most comforting thing. And Psalm 85, it says, God is our sun and our shield. No good thing does he withhold from those who walk in righteousness. And that's something I really struggle with. To believe that God's not withholding anything good from me is sometimes something impossible for me to believe. But it's something that I have to keep going back to and reminding myself of.
What has God taught you in having cancer? What have you learned?
It's taught me a lot about myself, I think. It's very humbling having cancer. You're very dependent on other people. You're very helpless and weak, and it's not very glamorous. And I think, going back to often wondering what my life would have been like if I hadn't had cancer, I think it has shown me a lot of the pride I've had in struggling to realize that, I can't find my identity in my achievements or the things that I do or the great life that we're all told we're supposed to live. I can't have that, and I haven't had that. It's taught me a lot about my own pride and kind of the things that I thought were good. And it's also just taught me that I'm completely not in control in this life. Which has been interesting because I think in some ways my life is very different, but it's not different to anyone else because we all face uncertainty. We all know that we could get hit by a bus tomorrow. Before I was sick, I knew I was going to die and I didn't know when. But now I still know I'm going to die, but I don't know when. So in some things, something's really changed. So we're all kind of in the same boat, really.
What do you need from us? What are the things that, as a church, we do well in supporting? And what don't we do so well? Actually, one of the things Beck shared with me, she's like, I don't want to get up, I don't want to do this. And I'm like, why not? And it wasn't because she's scared of public speaking. It's because you feel that this makes it more awkward when you're meeting people. You're like, oh, now I'm the cancer girl and people don't know how to talk to me. They're just embarrassed. And you feel that, yeah?
I didn't want it to define me. I mean, it does define my life, but I don't. know a lot of people here.
But people are weird. People, so you find people get weirded out by you?
I think it is a very uncomfortable thing to talk about. And I think, I think a lot of the time people are just worried about upsetting me, which is understandable, or reminding me or bringing it up. But I want people to know, don't ever worry about asking how I am or asking how my health is, because it's like, I'll just be grateful that you care, and it's not like I ever forget that I have cancer. So,
so you when it was like 2 weeks, you'd been to church 2 weeks and you found out you had cancer, and Liz and I had the dilemma, do we go and visit this girl that's only been at church 2 weeks and has ended up in hospital? And so we said, oh, she's our one and only visitor, we probably should do it. So armed with a Frankie magazine and, I don't know, something else, we came and visited. And you said to me, you know, what? It's way better for people to overstep than understep. And so what other, you know, what is, how can we support you? What are the things that we can do for you? And then what else can we be doing that's helpful, and what actually isn't helpful?
I do think overstepping is probably better than understepping. I can't speak for everyone, but I think it's worse to feel like everyone's avoiding you or no one cares than people being in your face. And I think often leave it up to the person who's going through the hard time to kind of say, no, I don't want to talk about it, or I don't want to see you, or whatever. Continued prayer is always good. It's sometimes hard to keep asking for prayer, especially when it's not a one-off event, it's ongoing. I think for me, more than just doing nice things and practical things, which are great, making you feel loved in that way, the thing that most helps me is seeing other people cling to Christ and seeing other people carry their own burdens and carry their own cross and making their own sacrifices and because they love God. I know a lot of people do that in this church, and for me, when I see that, that helps me to go, oh yeah, like this is the stuff that matters, and we do have hope in eternity, and it's not the world that our hope is in. And that for me, that's such a huge encouragement for me. So when you're going through a hard time, it's easy to forget that. It's easy to forget that there is an eternal hope. And so seeing other people actually live it out in real life is a great encouragement.
And the corresponding negative there is that when you see people making compromise, you were sharing with me, being worldly, you find that incredibly discouraging.
On the flip side, when you see other Christians putting too much focus and too much emphasis on the things of this world, it can be quite disheartening, because for me, I go, well, I don't have a lot in this world, so that can be really hard.
We love you, Rebecca Gayham, and we're very thankful that you had the courage and the health to get up and share today.